Toronto.
And welcome to the Tater Report, CIT 89.5 FM. I'm Phil Tater, your host. With me is Phil Condon. How are you doing, Phil?
Good afternoon, Phil.
And we are, as the man says, the new sound of your city. And, of course, this is the time to build a station, a little station that can, then a little station that does. Of course, we want you to call and donate to CIT and to the Tater Report. And you know the numbers, 416-946-7800. You can call us if you're anywhere in the world. You can call us on toll-free at 1-888-204-8976. And, of course, you know, the really efficient way is to go online, www.ciut.fm. It's you get the quickest, happiest results because it says, yes, thank you very much, got that. Name is the show, everybody's...
And sends you the tax receipt instantaneously.
Pardon me?
And sends the tax receipt instantaneously. In 2 minutes, you'll have your official tax receipt.
You will have that thing, which we save you somewhere down the line. Of course, listen, get a membership. It's easy to remember, $89.50, and you could become a member and give you a lot of power and authority and help us shape the programming and the entire station
and
the future of radio.
You get to carry a card.
And you can be a card-carrying member.
Card-carrying member of CIUT.
Could, you know, you might find yourself in front of a Senate committee one afternoon, you know, saying, have you supported the Tater Report? Yes, sir. How long did you, could I ask, speak to my counsel, please? Anyhow, call us up, 416-946-7800, toll-free, 1-888-204-8976, and you can donate online at www.ciut.fm. And there's this new thing, Phil. Do you understand? It's called hashtag CIUT Donate.
That's
Speak intelligently of that.
That has something to do with Twitter. Yeah. If you're a Twitterer, hashtag CIUT.
And this is not an accusation. We're not smearing your reputation. But if
if you are a Twitterer, you can go to hashtag CIUT Donate.
Yeah,
and you're really plugged right into everything that's happening at
CIUT. And you will right away reach the destination.
You will. And thousands of other
Phil Condon has said that, so we're going to take that as a given, as a true thing. By the way, we are not going to be mentioning second names, or full names, but we are going to say we thank you very much to people who have, and some have already, people are getting so smart. As soon as they heard that fundraising was going on, they, of course, did this thing, www.ciut.fm, and got in touch, and have already pledged to the show. So, Ted, thank you very much. And there's another gentleman who is very consistent, and that's Stan, thank you. Sometimes known as Stanley, but as I say, we're not going into second names. His name, I will tell you this, he is not the famous Mr. Cup. He is Stanley, and we're very grateful. And you can call us at 416-946-9946. I'm going to give my head a shake and get some espresso.
946-7800.
Once, you know, it's like trying to pronounce a name. Once
you get it wrong, you used to have a program here called Caffeine Free.
Yeah,
that was a mistake, wasn't it?
Yeah, I said, you're going to have to transfer me. I cannot do this. With a straight face, you know, I am not caffeine free. So, any rate, again, the best way is to get yourself a membership, 89.50. Of course, we are CIUT 89.5 FM. So go to, and we're trying to raise $89,500. My hat is off to the conceptualists who make it so easy for me to talk about this. It's $89.50, and you get to be a member, with all of the that goes with it. You get to hire and fire and big word in the meetings, and people will respect you when you go down the street, and you have a card, and you can get a T-shirt, is my understanding.
Right, and there's also prizes. A handful of people who become members are going to get everybody who contributes at the membership level or up is going to have their name entered into a hat. Somebody's going to draw some names out of a hat, and those people whose names are drawn from the hat will have prizes. And you still have all the other benefits you get.
And you win, you're the Cat in the Hat. So this is the new sound of your city. And what do we do on the Taylor Report? Well, listen, we had, when I don't know why she'd use the word, but a sad event of a Canadian soldier killed under rather peculiar conditions in Iraq, we went to Mr. Taylor, not myself, and he's, matter of fact, he's not related to me, Scott Taylor, who has a wonderful column. He's, of course, he had a military career, and he's been all over Kingdom Come visiting war sites and battle scenes. And he'd been to the Kurdish area of Iraq 20, 30 times, and he was even kidnapped there. So we spoke to him. And he gave us all kinds of insights into what had unfolded there and what we needed yet to know. And CIUT listeners will be happy to know that there's a happy CIUT listener right now. They'll be happy to know that when he raised questions that needed to be answered, and he suggested that the Parliament needed to do that, those answers haven't been forthcoming yet. As a matter of fact, it seems our Parliament seems to be rather quiet. Somebody belonging to the Special Forces was at 11 o'clock or later at night in a battle zone, encountered at a roadblock run by our allies, and that ally, in a friendly way, killed a Canadian soldier. And many people wanted to know the answer. All the people who wanted to know the answer, wear suits and appear in Parliament, have stopped asking. So, but you're listening to Taylor Report. We're still asking, see. And Scott Taylor, he's still asking. He is one smart guy who writes a terrific column. And you heard him on the Taylor Report on CIUT. So therefore, we are suggesting you appreciate the new sounds of your city, and you appreciate having alternative radio. And therefore, you would go to CIUT.fm and simply say you want to donate, and then make sure you spell our name right. It's a Taylor Report, and make a donation, and preferably, ideally, become a member so that we strengthen the CIUT family. 416-946-7800. And that's our donation line. And another donation line, if you're calling from Hong Kong, it's 1-888-204-8976. By the way, if you happen to be in Stockholm, Sweden, we want to know, call us and donate, and then tell us how come Sweden is thinking about joining NATO. There's a lot of people here who would like to know that. As a matter of fact, if you call from Stockholm, tell them you want to get through, and we'll talk with you. But at any rate,
and I've got to tell our listeners that right now the phone lines are jammed. We have so many callers, so people are getting an old-fashioned busy signal. And if you're under a certain age, you won't even recognize what a busy signal sounds like.
What's a busy signal?
Right, a busy signal. It goes beep, beep, like that anyway. Yeah. Keep trying, because we'll clear those calls off, and we have plenty of people outside waiting to answer your calls.
We're nothing but well-mannered. If we're not, and we say we'll take your money, believe me, there's nobody here is offended. We're going to wait for that money, and we're going to buy a brand new whatever. We have excellent equipment. I'm a veteran of alternative radio broadcasting. I was raised on it, et cetera. KPFA Berkeley, I used to listen to religiously, and I can appreciate how much effort goes into making this station so efficient, with good gear and, of course, wonderful volunteers, trained volunteers. They know what they're doing. And but your support's what makes all that work, because, you know, we I remember the good old days when I had to hold one earpiece thing called a headset, but it was just one of them.
It was
one
piece
of
it.
To one, an ear set.
Yeah, yeah.
And then I would, you know, kind of guess at what the person was saying to me on the phone, and then I would ask him a question, and he would guess at what I said. So things have really come along.
Phil, I want to ask you a question. We've been talking a lot about history on this show. We've talked about the War of 1812 and the anniversaries, and the anniversaries of the American Civil War. Tomorrow is the 150th anniversary of the murder. They call it an assassination. It was the murder of President Lincoln. And I haven't seen anything in the press, in the U.S. press, that anybody is commemorating this, noticing this anniversary. And
very, very little.
What's going on?
And I'm glad you asked. And that is a totally unprompted question. I do not know where this came from. It is extremely important because you had this vice president issue. And a lot of people look at Obama and then they look at Joe Biden, you know, creepy Biden, you know, and they say, "Ooh, that's how close we are." You know, it really takes your breath away. Well, Abraham Lincoln, on April the 4th, visited the conquered rebel capital of Richmond, and he met former slaves. And that's the first and only and unique meeting in American history where the President of the United States, who had signed the Emancipation Proclamation saying no more slavery, but of course that was on paper. Ending slavery meant defeating the slave states, the Confederates, which they did. And With that moment, he went to Richmond, where on March 31st, they sold their last slave. They were still selling slaves, still selling Americans. Those, of course, were Americans. They were black Americans who were enchained and had been been laboring for 250 years. And so Abraham Lincoln wanted to be there. He didn't have this as a show in planned. He arrived a little bit ahead of schedule, and people were excited and shocked to see him. There was no honor guard. He walked through the city of Richmond headed for the office of the chief slave-owning rebel, Jefferson Davis, and he was led there by former slaves. That's the moment in American history that is ignored totally, because that was a one-off. Since then, it's been racial adjustments, and where presidents talk about civil rights but don't really act on them, quite the contrary. I think I'm really glad you raised it, because there's an important difference between his successor, Mr. Johnson, Andrew Johnson. Andrew Johnson was an out-and-out, flat-out racist. He thought slavery was bad, but he thought racism was good. No problem with racism. He just had a problem with slavery. And he also was more in favor just of the Union. The issue of slavery didn't excite him so much. In the case of Abraham Lincoln, you can debate the extent or degree that he might have himself held racial feelings, but he signed all those laws, all those amendments to the Constitution that said slavery's over, African Americans are citizens of the United States, and then he said the black Americans had the right to vote. Now, you can't get any more dramatic than that. No president has ever equaled him. I don't know. Occasionally someone says something flattering about Obama, about, oh, he thinks this and he thinks that. 13th, 14th, and 15th Amendments, the defeat of the slave power, that was what you want to remember. 600,000 lives lost. And all during the war, people kept saying, well, let's just compromise. Let's just make a deal. And Lincoln said, no, these are rebels and we're going to crush them. We are going to crush them. And why did he go to Richmond? Because he was an athlete in a sense. He understood victory, and he wanted a taste of it. He wanted to go and sit down in the chair of Jefferson Davis, and he did. He sat right down where Jefferson Davis used to sit. And a bunch of his generals showed up and started waving and whatnot and celebrating. And somebody who had been a servant for Jefferson Davis said, Mr. Lincoln, Mr. President, is there something I can get you? He said, I think these gentlemen are going to want a strong drink, but you can bring me some water.
That's very nice. I like
so that. That's the answer to that question, I hope. But you made a very nice way. The horror of that assassination on Good Friday, April the 14th, 1865, the horror of it, we're still feeling now. We don't understand. Had he survived, he was not Andrew Johnson. He was a fully grown mind and a great spirit, and so many better things would have happened. Not perfect, but a lot of better things would have happened. So, and the man who killed him was a Confederate agent, John Wilkes Booth. He was not just an actor who had a lot of extra passion. He was a long-time serving spy and ally and agent of the Confederacy. He wasn't just anybody. He had a network of people that he was one of the leaders of. He wasn't the leader, by the way, but he was one of the guys. It was a secret network. Anybody can look it up. If you listen to the Taylor Report, call us up, 416-946-7800, toll free, 1-888-204-8976. If you listen to the Taylor Report, we talked, for example, to an American scholar who studied Mr. Booth and his friends, and he's clarified for us the issue of Dr. Mudd, you know, oh, poor Dr. Mudd, you know, all he did was set the broken leg of Wilkes Booth, didn't realize. Well, he pointed out he knew John Wilkes Booth. Dr. Mudd had introduced John Wilkes Booth to Mr. Surratt, who was another key figure in the assassination of Abraham Lincoln. And so by that, we know that he wasn't just an individual. I think we have someone on the line. Hello? Oh, wait a minute. Hello?
Hello.
Is this David Jacobs?
It is me.
Oh, well, okay. That shows we're really organized around here. So organized that I didn't even pay attention. Thanks for being in touch with us. Of course, we're raising funds today. I have thanked several Davids. I'm not going to go into whether or not you might have been one of them. But I want to ask you something. The Toronto Star over the weekend carried a story that naming several people in Canada who may have been on a list of people to, I guess there's no other word for this, but a hit list by the government of Rwanda. What are your thoughts about that story?
Well, it's a terrifying story, but it's also bringing something home, which has been getting increasing attention, but probably not enough attention until recently, which is that the Rwandan dictatorship, I think it's fair to use the term dictatorship, is astonishingly ruthless with its opponents and has engineered a series of assassinations. Of course, starting off with the major assassination, which was the shooting down of the plane carrying the president of Rwanda, Habyarimana, and the president of Burundi in April 6, 1994. Not just them, actually, but government ministers and chief of staff of the army and so on, which, as every observer will tell you, started the April conflagration, which cost massively in terms of human life and bloodshed.
Have you heard of people who died at the hands of this government outside Rwanda?
Yes. I mean, of course, it's been reported by the BBC and others that Patrick Karegeya, who was a former Rwandan intelligence chief, was strangled to death in his hotel room in South Africa in 2012. General Kayumba Nyamwasa has survived four assassination attempts, was shot in South Africa. He's survived, thankfully, but he was a general in the Rwandan Patriotic Front. I mean, these are people, Patrick Karegeya and General Nyamwasa, who were up to a point loyal supporters and so on of Paul Kagame and his government, but had enough of it and came out and out of the country and told the truth.
Yes.
And Paul Kagame's response, as I understand it, to the assassination of Karegeya was to say a number of things, including, I think it was on that occasion that he said, well, they can run, but they can't hide. And then he said he wasn't responsible for the assassination, wishes he was. And he's not going to lose any sleep over it.
He wishes he had been.
Yeah.
Which is a kind of a morbid joke. I mean, you could be charged for that kind of talk in ordinary civilian life.
Of course.
And we're speaking to David Jacobs. I want to ask you about a witness of yours, if you would outline for us. But just before you do that, I want to just tell our listeners, this is Taylor Report, and of course it's a new Sound of Your City CIUT, and we are asking you to donate and become members, and you can become a member, $89.50, and you can just and you can also donate. And call us at 416-946-7800 or toll free. I said already I'd like to hear from Stockholm. But anyway, 1-888-204-8976 and online CIUT.FM. Now, Dave, what happened to your witness that would cause you to say that there's credence to this story in the Toronto Star the past weekend?
Yeah, I mean, I think one of the sort of great difficulties in the practice and procedure of international criminal law, and particularly before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda, is the danger that witnesses face when they come to testify for the defense and then from the point of view of the government of Rwanda, against the government of Rwanda, because the government of Rwanda wanted all of the people who were accused before the International Criminal Tribunal for Rwanda to be convicted, according to their narrative and so on. But the problematic that we found out during the trials that were being conducted there was that the government of Rwanda, through the prosecution, actually knew who all of the defense witnesses were and were going to be, notwithstanding the fact that many defense witnesses had the protection, witness protection, from the tribunal itself.
So when they would go home from testifying, they would have a document with them saying that they had been a witness, right?
That's right. We heard numerous stories from witnesses that, A, they were frightened in the first place, but in the second place we heard that it would become common knowledge when they went back to Rwanda, in the case of those witnesses who had come from Rwanda, that they had testified the defense and that they were imperiled. I mean, one witness that I was thinking of was a person who had not wanted to be returned to where he had come from because he had worried that there were kidnappings going on there. He was unfortunately reassured he was sent back to where he'd come from. We later found out that he hadn't actually been picked up and kidnapped and sent to Kigali.
By the way, just to be clear, he was in a neighboring country. He wasn't Rwanda.
That's right. Went back to was taken forcibly, as I understand it, to Rwanda and disappeared into Rwanda's jails after that. So he's thankfully still alive, but was subject to all kinds of illegal treatment, including the kidnapping and so on.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, these people had well-founded fears. This is a dictatorship in every sense of the term. Certainly, years ago we heard stories of journalists being killed. I think one was beheaded near the border with Congo, as I recall it.
Oh, yes. That journalist was reporting on the Victoire Ingabire, who had returned to her country seeking to run for office. By the way, we shouldn't even confuse people. She never got so far as to run for office. Instead, she is doing a lot of time in a Rwandan prison.
Sure. I mean, on the point that we're talking about, I would recommend the BBC documentary called Rwanda's Untold Story, which was the subject of a complaint recently to the BBC from...
But that complaint was tossed out, right?
The complaint was very recently tossed out, yes.
Yeah,
but a number of individuals... supporters of the Kagame regime were others had signed on to the complaint. So it's rather good to see the BBC standing up for itself.
Yeah. Well, again, this is David Jacobs. And I was asked by a number of people, since I worked together with yourself, Ramsey Clark, Charles Roach, Peter Zadok, John Philpott, oh my goodness, Luke Temple. I worked with a lot of lawyers there, so people asked me what I thought of this story, and I credit it quite a bit. But I also point out that in the case of Rwandans abroad, they are the most threatened. People should be understand that, because the president made a blanket threat against members of his community, the Rwandan society.
Well,
in which he said, you know, basically he practices extraterritoriality. In that sense, by the way, I think he's imitating his betters, since after all, the president of the United States reserves the right to kill an American citizen using a drone without benefit of trial.
If
people wonder where Mr. Kagame might have gotten such an idea, perhaps he was just following one of his best friends.
Well, since it's your membership week, maybe assist if I pointed out we have a Rwandan Canadian citizen who has been subject to some press recently, David Himbara, who was a former chief of staff of President Kagame, and was critical, among other things, of the rosy economic forecasts and stuff that kept coming out of Rwanda. Rwanda's
Yes, I think, by the way, in terms of him, there's no question that his credentials as an economist and the fact that he's challenging the sort of rationalization of the presence in power of the general is probably the most dangerous thing anybody could say.
Well, and he, David Himbara, had the support of the publisher of the Toronto Star, John Hondrich. Mm-hmm. Publisher, editor, I'm sorry, I'm not sure I got his title right, but who was on your program. So,
that's right.
Another reason to support public radio.
Well, thank you very much. Yes, 416-946-7800. Please call us up. David Jacobs just mentioned that. Yeah, I agree. And another thing about David Himbara is that he was told, he learned of the threat on his life from the British police. You know, in other words, it wasn't a phone call from a stranger. This was the police came to see him and said, there are two guys that entered the country or attempted to enter the country, and you are the guy they were looking for.
Yeah,
that's my understanding.
I think that's right. Mr. Himbara has been quoted as saying, that this is a worldwide problem now.
Sure.
Extraterritoriality, as you put it, Phil. Sweden had to expel a Rwandan diplomat for endangering.
Actually,
they've recently
also arrested and convicted one individual for planning to carry out terrorist attack. And he's Rwandan. They said he was sent by the Rwandan government. That's a Swedish court. So it's really very important. And David, I'm very grateful that you could take the time to talk to us about this. It's obviously a story that's going to have some new chapters. So we look forward to talking to you again.
Thank you. My pleasure to support the Taylor Report.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
And call us up, 416-946-7800. And, you know, to do it nice and neat and efficiently where you are satisfied instantly with, as Phil says, tax receipt. That's Phil with one L. I'm Philip with two. CIUT.FM. Just go to that, and then they'll tell you what to do. And when you come to the part where it says favorite show, Taylor Report, and then everything will be very good. And if you become a member, you'll be part of the CIUT family, and you can blow a whistle and point and make decisions and get a T-shirt. It's like that.
And also with your membership card, you get discounts at some very, very nice merchants who support CIUT. So that's
a power card.
That is a powerful card.
Power
that
card.
And
I think somebody
is ringing.
Somebody is phoning me because they think it's a way to donate is call me, and I really am flattered. This is the Taylor Report and the new sound of your city. And call our donation lines, 416-946-7800. Shortly, by the way, we're going to have a brief word with Safar Bengash, Crescent International, because about 2 weeks ago on our show, he predicted something. And since, you know, when someone predicts something and it happens, you know, you should note that, right? If somebody told you the Yankees are going to win the World Series at the beginning of the season and then it happens, you got to call them up and say, how'd you know that? What was it, you know? Although it is the Yankees, that would be one answer.
Okay, I'm not going to make a prediction. They're not going to be in the World Series.
Okay, hey, Phil's on the record. They're not going to be in the series. And is that because of Alex?
Well,
we don't use last names, you know.
He's no help.
Yeah.
But no, they're just they're like the U.S. They're a little overfed and overblown and
overpaid.
Over the hill and definitely overpaid.
I had a friend, a dear man who served in World War II, a great veteran. He worked for the Stars and Stripes paper, Canadian, and he said he was there with the Army and he had some incoming, so he knows something about war. And I said, well, there were a lot of Americans there, and he said, yes. He said the British said, they're overpaid, they're overfed, and oversexed, and they're over here.
That's right. That is what they said.
That is what they said. And I'm just reporting. Okay, CIUT.FM, and calling us from Nairobi. You would use 1-888-204-8976, and you can call us locally, 416-946-7800. Become a member, 8950, or donate and do all of the above. And this is the new sound of your city, CIUT membership drive, but we are salting it and peppering it with some pretty bright people. And by the way, one of them's on the line, Zafar Bengash. Are you there, Zafar?
Hello, Phil. Yes, I am.
Zephyr, you won the prize. You told us on this show that I mentioned that Pakistan had become part of this ugly coalition violating international law and dropping bombs on the people of Yemen, an act of war. And I said, well, Pakistan is part of that. And you said, I don't know. There's going to be trouble with that, and I doubt that they're going to follow through. Talk about that.
Yes, of course. Well, basically, what I did was to read the situation in Pakistan carefully. I'm aware that the public sentiment was overwhelmingly against joining the Saudi-led war against Yemen. That was clear. The other, I think, important factor was that the military in Pakistan was also reluctant. Mm-hmm. Because they are already involved in an internal conflict against these various militant groups, and it would have been extremely difficult for the military to spare mm-hmm. Any substantial number of forces. Mm-hmm. And I think the third factor that perhaps the political leadership in Pakistan realized was, and it was obvious to the rest of us, but I think they also realized that if they got involved in Yemen, they would get into a quagmire from which there is no easy exit.
Mm-hmm.
And so they decided that the best thing is to express their solidarity with the Saudi regime and say, well, if there is any threat to Saudi territorial integrity mm-hmm. or to the holy places, then that Pakistan would stand shoulder to shoulder with them.
Mm-hmm.
So that is what the Pakistani parliament resolution said.
Now, there was a... was it the foreign minister who took a bite out of the, was it the UAE? Because someone in the Gulf decided to insult Pakistan.
Oh, yes. That was the UAE Minister of State for Foreign Affairs, Muhammad Anwar Bagrash.
Mm-hmm.
Incidentally, I've met the fellow. This was, mm-hmm. about 12, 15 years ago.
That'll happen.
It happens. Actually, I had a long chat with him, at that time, of course, he was blowing his steam off against Iran because mm-hmm. he was saying that, well, Iran has occupied some of our islands. So it seems to me that the guy is really prone to outbursts.
Mm-hmm.
But it was really...
But
really
in this
funny.
Case, he seems to be justified, right? I mean, is he right that it's outside... It's outside ordinary protocol for someone to speak about the Pakistan in the way that the UAE minister did.
Yes, absolutely. In fact, the Pakistani interior minister, the following day, actually mentioned that. He said that he not only used very undiplomatic language, but that his remarks were uncalled for. And some commentators in Pakistan, with tongue in cheek, they said, well, I think Pakistan should probably send a brigade of its elite commandos and just take over the United Arab Emirates. Because these guys don't
know how to
run.
Someone with a sense of humor. Well, by the way, it should bother Pakistan that a country with no military capacity to speak of, it just money, thinks they can talk that way to a sovereign country.
Absolutely, and in fact, the thing is that when they wanted to start their war, I don't think they consulted Pakistan. Normally you would expect that if, let's say, they consider Pakistan to be an ally, then there should have been consultation. And I'm sure that, people in the Pakistan Foreign Office are seasoned diplomats. They know the ins and outs of the situation, and they would have counseled against such an adventure that was going to lead to a lot of chaos in the region.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, I noticed that in addition to Pakistan, even Turkey, that initially had expressed support for the Saudi war on Yemen, the Turkish president also said that I think we ought to encourage a dialogue in Yemen and bring these people to the negotiating table so that this can be resolved. And I think that's the only way out of this mess that the Saudis and its allies have created, because there is absolutely no way that they can achieve their stated objective, and that is to reinstate the fugitive president or prime minister, president, yes, Rabu Mansur Hadi, who has sought refuge in Saudi Arabia.
I notice he's come up with a wrinkle now. He's decided he has a vice president who enjoys a little more popularity in the country than he does. What, what do you make of that?
They keep on changing their position, every second day, depending on...
How does this look?
That's right, exactly. So I guess my deputy is more popular than I am, so let him be the president.
One other, and the most important, I guess, how about this commentary that I'm reading, that the Pakistan population and the Pakistan parliament, as I guess a reflection of that, is less enamored of this new game of trying to get Sunni to fight Shia?
Absolutely. In fact, within Pakistan, this Shia-Sunni thing has, of course, deliberately been instigated by the Saudis and others, essentially to try to keep Pakistan and Iran apart from each other or separated. But within the actual population, I'll have to say that apart from a tiny minority, the overwhelming majority of people in Pakistan do not subscribe to the Shia-Sunni division. They'd rather have amity and friendship and, live in peace with each other.
Yes.
But unfortunately, these external forces keep on...
Well, by the way, I understand, and I'm sorry to interrupt, but I want to get your confirmation. The Saudis, I understand, ask that they only send Sunni soldiers...
That is correct,
from
yes.
Pakistan, which has a very high percentage of... Not a high, well, a substantial percentage of Shia soldiers.
Absolutely. In fact, within the Pakistan Armed Forces, they are very, very particular about not getting into any sectarian talk. Mm-hmm. They want to make sure that they can maintain the integrity of the armed forces. So, obviously, the top officer, the higher echelon of the military, were very displeased by this particular Saudi request as well, and they would not entertain any such notions at all.
Wow. Well, Zafar Benghazi, a lot of insight. We do appreciate it. And congratulations. Thank you very much for telling us long ago that what was probably going to happen in Pakistan.
Well, thank you for the opportunity. Appreciate it.
We look forward to talking to you again, Zafar Benghazi, Crescent International. Thank you.
Thanks. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. So that's why you only call us up and toll-free. If you're listening in Pakistan, you probably just heard Zafar, who's one an outstanding figure from that country. 1-888-204-8976. You can call us also 416-946-7800. And to really do it quickest and most efficient is CIUT.FM, and then just say the Taylor Report, and then give a ton of money, and then everybody would be really happy. And Phil, we have hashtag donate. CIOT
donate. CIOT donate.
And you have a rough idea what that means.
I have a rough. I know that if you're on Twitter and you do that, then all of a sudden the Twitter sphere explodes and there's all kinds of twittering. Right.
Yes.
And all kinds of activity, and that for people on the Twitter sphere, that's very important stuff.
See, and this is new. I mean, I don't think we had it last year, right? I don't remember.
No, we didn't have it last year. And of course, the Taylor Report has a Facebook page, and CIUT has a Facebook page. And by the way, Phil, if I could just take a minute to mention, this is a really terrific radio station. First of all, it has the Taylor Report. That already makes it a terrific radio station.
This just cross-fills my day.
But this station is on the air 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. You and I have both had the experience of being in here on New Year's Day, on New Year's Eve, on Christmas, because the radio station...
Valentine's Day.
Look at that. That one really... Groundhog Day. We come to work on Groundhog Day.
I think,
Day.
By the way, we got something from Valentina. Thank you very much, Valentina.
And so I just wanted to mention a couple of the other programs that I listen to on CIUT, because besides my own Classical Underground, and of course this fantastic program, CIUT Friday Morning, which you host and which you very modestly don't really take credit for. But let me tell you that Phil Taylor hosts a program called CIUT Friday Morning, 9 a.m. on Friday mornings, and it is terrific program of theater and film reviews and commentary. But here's the names of five shows that people, if they're not listening to, would be well advised to listen to. Ruby Slippers with our good friend Carol Barrett, who is the host.
Yeah.
Ballad Creole, because Ballad Creole is on Sundays, and it acknowledges the fact that we have a community in Toronto of Franco-Caribbean people, and that's their show. Indigenous Waves, which is on just before us. Radio Boogie, which is on just before I'm on with Classic Underground, plays this wonderful old music from before the big corporations got hold of country and western, when it was really folk people. Well, and Vinyl from the Crypt is another one of my favorites. Anyway, you have a phone caller now.
You go from Boogie to Classical Underground. That's a step.
No, I think it's a continuum. It's great.
There you go. Phil Conlon is no snob. So Miguel San Vicente, I think, is of a different book list, is with us. Are you there, Miguel?
Yeah. Hello, Philip. Yes, I'm here.
Hey, I'm good to hear from you. I saw you at Betsatoon. That was what a great meeting. And I always like to say Betsatoon. I just want to. The reason I mention that is because I like to say Betsatoon. Anyhow, yes.
We were very pleased to partner with you on that evening. It was very successful, and it was really the culmination of 20 years of tireless and relentless investigation to unravel the truth. Yeah. Of what happened in Rwanda.
Thank you.
And so we really appreciated that. And you know, we've been partnering with a different the Taylor Report on a number of
book launches.
Yes, and so we were very, very appreciated and pleased about that.
Well, it's great to hear from you, and it's great to know. By the way, could you tell us, there's a great new book. I'm certainly looking forward to reviewing on the Taylor Report. I think it's already in your store. It is about these Canadian black African Canadians who joined the Union Army and fought in the Civil War.
Yes. It's called African Canadians in Union Blue, and it was written by a professor at Guelph history, Professor Reed. But it's a very welcome addition to the literature on African Canadians and the participation in this war, because you know, we have heard many times about the black loyalists and who fought for the British in the War of 1812, and there's a lot of celebration of those fighters who actually had to be convinced to be part of the British effort. By giving them land, because, you know, it wasn't something that you would think that black people in Canada, some of them ex-slaves, would particularly want to join the British Army.
Yeah.
But
that's a big
step. They were promised land. But that's the narrative that we hear often. But this other narrative of African Canadians who actually fought in the Civil War and actually fought with the Union troops, and thousands of them apparently, There's a little is known about that, and so we are very happy to have a book like this, and we look forward to launching it at some time soon.
Well, and you know the Taylor Report, we like books, so we're going to make sure we talk to that author, and you're absolutely right. By the way, the man known as to history as Uncle Tom, Mr. Henson, Josiah Henson, was involved in all of that, and that's another matter we want to talk about on the Taylor Report. So, Miguel, thank you very, very much. A Different Book List is a wonderful institution.
And we want to urge all your listeners to contribute, because this is a show that's much needed. It exposes the truth of what's going on, and we need it. So let's contribute. Continue to big up the show.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Miguel.
Okay. All right. Thank you, Phil.
Yeah. Bye-bye. That's Miguel and... I'm not going to differ with that, folks. I mean, call us up at 416-946-7800. What a wonderful little institution, a Different Book List. I don't call it a little only in space, big in influence, a Different Book List on Bathurst, just below Bloor at you all know as Honest Ed. Just continue down the street to the best little place called A Different Book List. And you can find that book along with just a lot of... it's a fact that the black history, African history in North America is pretty much marginalized. It's there. There's a lot of beautiful, wonderful books, and this store is where you'll find them. If you go to some other place, you might have to talk to a clerk about ordering, but this A Different Book List, it's there. It's on the shelf. So anyhow, wonderful people. Call us at 416-946-7800, toll-free 1-888-204-8976. And the fastest, most efficient plastic way to do it is CIOT.FM. And then make sure you say the Taylor Report. We want to make sure we say thank Ron. And remember Karen Snooks, who was a dear friend of ours, a labor leader and an artist, and an intelligent, sensitive, and wonderful spirit. We knew her for so many years, and she passed away, but we always remember her. And from Ron, we get a donation, and we thank him very, very much. And I always say we've got to get some of her work. She was a very good artist, and we need to put it up on our – we have a site, taylor-report.com. We're going to find that and make sure we get it. And also, we want to remember – another longtime supporter who has passed away, Bev Brown, and Mike has made a contribution, a donation in her name. And she was with the steelworkers, and one of the – there used to be a group called Women in Steel, and she was the leader of it. And if you ever knew Bev, she was the kind of person, if you went to the meeting, you'd say, who should be the chairman? Everybody would point and say, Bev should do that. She had gravitas. If she said, the meeting's come to order, by golly, it had come to order. So we remember Bev Brown of his steelworkers. Hey, George, I'm calling out names here. Assume it's yourself, George. And, of course, Miguel we spoke to, by the way. I'm afraid I'll let you know who he was, Marcia and Catherine and Dave, and by the way, we have Dave's, David, Davey, thanks very much, and Randy and Patrick, we're very appreciative, and Gary, and call us and keep the CIUT rolling. It's 416-946-7800. This is a new sound of your city. And a chance to support CIT and become a member and support the Taylor Report. And again, if you are abroad or long distance, say you're in Berkeley. I know a few people in Berkeley. I know some people in San Francisco. Call me up. 1-888-204-8976, saying West Coast, saying Berkeley, San Francisco. There is the great Ann Garrison, who has been the champion of the imprisoned Victoire Ingabire. And, you know, people who throw other people in prison have a little secret information. They think, and this often is true, that the world forgets about those people they throw into dungeons. And a year goes by, and everybody says, well, what was that? Well, thanks to Ann Garrison, the world has not forgotten Victoire Ingabire. Of course, there are thousands of others working at the same post, but I would say that her writing and we've interviewed her on the show about her work and keep attention to this cause. And it strikes me that as the time unfolds, the injustice done to Victoria Ingabire is becoming increasingly evident, and she has chosen to courageously stand up for her rights and the rights of all Rwandans, and is paying a prison price for it. But she's going to win. This is going to this period of exclusion and period of repression. It's going to come to an end, and it's thanks to the courage of Victoire Ingabire and to people like Anne Garrison, who've been, been on the show. And we've talked to, my goodness, and so many people who are qualified to talk, like Mr. David Himbara, about this matter in Rwanda. We have talked to the Belgian officer, Luc Marchal, if you would remember, some time ago. He was in charge of security for the called the weapons-free zone of Kigali in the period of the death of the president, Habyarimana, and the subsequent violence and war with horrendous loss of life. And again, it's listeners to the Taylor Report who've been fortunate to learn of his opinions and get his account of events, which is what independent and alternative radio is about. If others and I hate to use this expression because it's such cliche now, mainstream media, MSM, I know, it's people rate just MSM. If they want to take this matter up, believe me, the Taylor Report will move on and look for something else, because, you know, that's our job, is only to try to bring some light matters which are not available otherwise. So that's why we hope you will donate and become a member, preferably $89.50, and you can, as Phil says, become a card-carrying member and get all kinds of privileges. And all you do is CIT.fm, and I know you're a literate, bright, talented, plastic-carrying group of people, and you can write in the Taylor Report and give this new sound of your city organization a big boost. And this is the Taylor Report.
And I think Robin Philpott is going to.
Boy, our cup runneth over. Our cup runneth over. I have a good question for him. I hope I got a good question. And I think we're joined by Robin Philpott. Are you there, Robin?
Hi, Phil.
Robin is the publisher of Baraka Books. What a remarkable publishing enterprise it is. Go to it online, by the way, and you'll see what a tremendous selection of Canadian books there are to read. Robin, I want to ask you maybe two quick questions. But, you know, you've had this activity there that we probably should underline, because students here are concerned about their tuition. And you, frankly, that was one of the greatest student movements in the history of this hemisphere, took place, where they fought off an attempt to increase tuition. How does it compare? Can you talk about that? Compare with the student situation in Quebec in terms of tuition with, say, Upper Canada? I read a lot of. I read so many history books. It's called Ontario now, isn't it? Okay.
Right. Well, I would say that our tuition fees are about half of what, or even less.
And that's why. Why is that?
Well, it's because, when they, in the 60s, they set up, the goal was to have basically free senior, upper, post-secondary education. And so they had a freeze on tuition fees for many years. And then the Liberals came in and tried to boost them way up to make them like they are in Ontario. And that's what started the big fight in 2012, which was successful, and they did not raise the tuition fees. Now they're coming back again with the austerity measures here in Quebec. But they didn't go after tuition fees, but they're trying to do it in different ways, like cut back in education, and that's why we're having big fights going on now that are
You know, the,
it's not,
the Anglo press here, you're fluent in French. The Anglo press here said, "Oh, the student protest culture of Quebec."
Yeah.
Patronizing an active population that expresses itself and and changes policy.
Because they really did change policy. They did, the Liberals came back into power, and they did not go after tuition fees openly. Mm-hmm. They're going after all other kinds of ways to cut back in education, which is where the fight's coming has come back again this year. But it's a little, you might say that the Liberals and are answering that by repression, and that's why you have these. I don't know whether you're hearing about it, but there's big fights going on in some of the schools. They brought the police into the UQAM, University of Quebec in Montreal.
So there you go.
On the premises. So.
Well, once again, and with support, the students react, but also the unions come and stand beside them and say, "I'm the president of this union, the president of that union, et cetera," and we're with these students, right?
And sort of the professors. Came out and tried to form a human chain between the police and the student demonstrators. So, it has heated up, and it's going to continue in the fall because the unions are going to very active this fall because they're trying to if you want to sum it up, they're demolishing a system which was set up here with the Quiet Revolution in the 60s. That's what's going on.
Well,
it's a quiet counter-revolution.
Yeah, you've coined a phrase.
Right.
We're talking to Robin Philpott. He's the publisher of Baraka Books. By the way, I've just got a notice we can continue on. I was a little nervous about our time, so I have an opportunity then to ask you or to get you to expand on this. You have published a really important book. It's called Justice Belied, The Unbalanced Scales of International Criminal Justice. It's edited by Sebastian Chartrand. And John Philpott, with whom I think you're acquainted. And tell us, something about this book. We had a meeting here at Betsatoon on this past Friday. There's quite a bit of interest. You know, this whole thing of where international justice is going, now I think people are starting, as the expression is, kind of starting to get it with what happened with Jomo Kenyatta. Call him Jomo, the son of Jomo Kenyatta.
Yeah.
But other prosecutions. So we had sort of like two issues. One is that the only people the ICC seems to be capable or willing to prosecute are Africans.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's the quality of the institution and the issue of who is behind it, being in name the principal power of the United States, which is not itself a member of any of these bodies that everybody's supposed to think are wonderful things. But so you brought out the book; it's a great benefit. Talk about it a bit.
Yeah, well, the one of the interesting points is people can't understand, you know, the ICC, how it operates, and how is it that the United States can use it if they're not members of it. And of course, it does. That's one thing that I understood when I read, when we were publishing the book, I came to understand how they did it. Of course, it's devised so that the Security Council can veto any attempts to indict somebody. I mean, in other words, they can veto any attempt to indict an American, for instance.
Yeah.
And Americans have also
or anybody else, I suppose. If they just is no.
They control who gets indicted. So in other words, it's so supposedly independent justice, but it is not. It is controlled ultimately by the Security Council, which means the United States has a veto. And then the United States has also signed bilateral agreements so that none of their nationals will ever be indicted under international criminal courts. So in other words, it's become one of these another way to use international criminal justice in order to advance U.S. and NATO interests. And as one thing as we pointed out in this book is that you start reading about the way people in the United States in the administration perceive international justice. And one guy said, he described the forerunner, which was the ICTY, as being a battering ram in the pursuit of U.S. and NATO interests. And this was a man supposedly described. He was the prosecutor. No, he was the U.S. ambassador for criminal or war crimes.
Yeah,
a guy named David Sheffer. So, this book really helps you understand how people they've tried to bring international justice into as another yeah. I would say another weapon in the pursuit of their domination.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we're speaking to Rahman Philpott. You're listening to an extended form of the Taylor Report. It's also we're speaking also for the program. I'm sorry.
Okay, Phil.
Yes.
If you got just 1 minute, if you might let me make a plug two forthcoming books at Verica Books. Do I have a time?
Absolutely have the time, Matt, but I'm going to make you plug something else afterwards. Go right ahead and plug the other two books. This is Rahman Philpott. By the way, call us up at 416-946-7800 or go to CIUT.fm and become a member of CIUT. And keep alternative and independent radio afloat. Okay, yes, I'm sorry, Rahman.
We have two important books, and people can go, they're announced three important books, but let me start with this one.
Go right ahead.
First is Rebel Priest in the Time of Tyrants, mm-hmm. Mission to Haiti, Ecuador, and Chile, written by a guy named a former missionary, for Quebec missionary, Claude Lacaille, who was in Chile after the coup d'etat in 73, and he was a theologian of liberation, mm-hmm. liberation theologist, and they did tremendous work. And this book will come out within a month, and it's prefaced by Miguel de Scotto, who was a minister who was suspended by John Paul II. And so it's a wonderful story and very, very important. On his day when Eduardo Galeano died. I'm just telling you, he died today. But
Galeano died today?
Yeah.
And Günter Grass and Galeano both passed away today.
And so if you want to know about liberation fights in Latin America, this book will be out very soon, Rebel Priest in the Time of Tyrants. Another book that's coming out is The Insatiable Ma, Volume 2 of the Nickel Range Trilogy by Mick Lowe.
And the Sage of Sudbury.
Right, and he tells a tremendous story of a major eco-resistance fight in Sudbury where the community and the workers fought to change what was the lunar landscape of Sudbury, you know, which was completely destroyed by pollution and showing collusion with Queen's Park. A great second novel.
Great. That's his, right. It's a trilogy, right?
It's a trilogy, and this is the second one. It's going to be out in a month. We'll have a launch up in Sudbury.
Well, I look forward
and
to
the third one.
We've had Mick on the show. Go ahead, please. Yes.
The third one is The Complete Muhammad Ali.
Ah.
And it's a biography by Ishmael Reed, 420-page.
Ishmael Reed, one of America's premier poets, perhaps the greatest American poet living, in my opinion, a playwright, a musician, and a real good street fighter when it comes to politics. he's not afraid of anybody. And we've had him on the show many, many times. I should say many, many times, but we've had him on this program. He has so much insight to think that he has sat down and done a biography of Muhammad Ali. Now, you know, so many of them are basically kind of idolatrous or a little distant. Here'd be a guy who, because of his power over language and his imagination, we're going to find out a lot about Muhammad Ali.
You really are. It's a wonderful book. It will be out in June, the end of June. And Ishmael is it's a 15-year project. Well, you could say it's a lifetime project on Ishmael's part, but he's been working on this for the last 15 years. It's a very exciting portrait of the man, of the times, of the 20th century and early 21st century, a political, historical portrait and biography. It's going to be a great book. And he's got all kinds of previously unpublished pictures, photos by a guy, Jose Fuentes, who was a great photographer, and Ishmael has the pictures. So, you know, we've got some...
All this at Baraka Books. By the way, they could go to your site. What is it? It's Baraka
Books. BarakaBooks.com.
Rockabooks.com.
All three of these books are, if they're not I think the Michelle Reed book is not up for sales yet, but the other one are up for pre-orders if people want to get them.
Well, when I think about that, I mean, the all three of those books, really important. The book about the priest, the liberation theologist, who was involved with Miguel de Soto. Phenomenal.
He was fighting Pinochet and John Paul II.
Yeah.
He was fighting them both at the same time, and they were, Pinochet and the Vatican were fighting together.
I know a man named Ted Schmidt, I think, going to really like that book. As a matter of fact, I mean, dear Ted might be listening. I would say to him, you got to review this book on the Taylor Report. We want that book reviewed by somebody who's qualified, and Ted Schmidt is that. He's very qualified. So that's a very important book, and we'll make sure to pay attention to it.
Great.
Now, by the way, on Ali, I mean, I just have to say, I can't never leave that subject alone. His shadow is so cast so far, and there are people who write now about athletes who take stands, like, you know, at the time of the Ferguson matter, the St. Louis Ram players came out and showed some solidarity with the black community of Ferguson, and everybody was moved by it. And always when such a thing happens, people take bring in the name of Ali, and they say, well, you know, Ali set the example.
The standard.
Yeah. And I love all of them, and I'm so glad they do it. And like we had on this show, John Carlos. We talked to the great John Carlos, who put his fist in the air at the time of, in 1968 at the Olympics in Mexico.
Right.
And all of them are so, but ahead of them was that moment of Muhammad Ali. And the moment lasted as long as he was the champion, actually. It just went on. And he was so creative. And I think that Ishmael Reed is one of those people who noticed this, that Muhammad Ali was, it's almost like there's a curse on him at the moment because he no longer speaks. He's with us. But he was exceptionally eloquent and put his finger on issues which took Herculean strength and courage to do.
Yeah.
And so that book is so important.
It's going to be a great contribution, and we're honored to be able to publish it, invited to publish it by Ishmael Reed.
By the way, make sure you drop it right into the lap of Muhammad Ali. he is going to be pleased to see this book.
But Ishmael, as you know, does not pull any punches, so he's sort of...
it's Ishmael's
book. He interviews Harry Belafonte. He's got all kinds of interviews there, and he has a balanced view. He's somewhat critical of his later move to the right, you might say, but it is Republican and that kind of thing. But it's a balanced, very balanced thing. And he also goes into the question of the Nation of Islam and the misinterpretation and how people have never understood how important that was in Muhammad Ali's development. But it's a kind of book you want to read two times, if not three.
Well, I would say three times. He was a champion at least three times.
Right, exactly.
So this is Robert Philpott. By the way, we're fundraising, and I have one more question for Robin before we let him go. This is, of course, CIUT, CIT.fm. Go on the line and make sure you save the Taylor Report. And become a member, $89.50, and you get to carry a plastic card. It makes you look like a privileged person. And the number is 416-946-7800, and toll-free 1-888-204-8976. This is Taylor Report at CIUT. Now, Robin, on your book, I want to compliment you again, because this, on timely books, Justice Belied, what I noticed that was so important to me as someone who did work at the tribunal and got to know so many of the lawyers and I encountered the judges and prosecutors and everybody. You have a number of lawyers from places like Cameroon, Kenya, Rwanda. Now, they have made observations which I think would be generally not turned to. And these are men and women who they would not be turned to by the mainstream publishers of Europe and North America.
Yeah,
well, Charles Taku comes to mind, a tremendous individual.
But when we sat down and looked at these possible papers, and we're going to commission more papers on this for this book, it's an anthology. We decided to have the first section, which is almost half the book, international criminal justice through the eyes of Africans and African Americans.
Mm-hmm.
Which nobody has asked, because people think, well, we have to serve justice on them, mm-hmm. but we don't ask their advice. And as of course Taku points out in one of his papers, that this was the original, this is the way it's always operated, from the 1880s or before. You know, Africa and Africans do not exist, and we don't consult them. So we decided just to organize our thing to counter that idea, and so I think in that way this book is among one of the reasons why this book is unique, because we did that.
If we're going to point out, as we have to do, that all of Africa notices that the only people being prosecuted by this ICC is Africans. Once we say that, we better make sure that they get the microphones and they get the articles published, because they're fighting the fight, right? They're the target.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. So,
and you will find that in Justice Belied, the unbalanced scales of international criminal justice.
Right.
And that's Baraka Books. Robert, one last thing. I suppose I should make sure. We did speak to you earlier about it, but and that was a week ago. You had a press conference led by a Rwandan gentleman
mm-hmm.
who's leader of a diaspora community.
Mm-hmm.
Could you just underline again what they were saying there and what you...
Well,
and you probably saw the Toronto Star article about...
It's about the threats against Canadians and Canadians of Rwandan origin and other Canadian citizens.
Mm-hmm.
We have very reliable information that this commando was operating on Canadian soil,
mm-hmm.
and this press conference was to alert the Canadian authorities mm-hmm. of this presence, and it was widely reported. It was widely reported, and the demand was that that they expel these people. Some of them are carrying diplomatic passports.
And by the way, other countries have. South Africa has removed people. And Sweden has. For anybody who thinks, this is just one story. No, it's actually several stories. Britain did it. Sweden. And there have been other countries where there's been problems, but in the case of South Africa, there was an ugly loss of life. We spoke to the daughter, Portia Karagea, who lost her father, and of course, we're all following closely the peculiar story of General Yamwasa, who mm-hmm. was not just there was attempt on his life, not just once, but I think three or four times, where people were harmed. And he was wounded.
Right, exactly. So this is what we wanted to make it known, because the only thing to do in it is to go public on it. And we had mm-hmm. among the people at the press conference were Emmanuel Hakizimana, who's a spokesperson or vice president of the Rwandan National Council, which is an opposition group, who has been threatened, who has got signed affidavits about that. There's an article in the Star, I think, on the weekend that deals with his case. With him, Judy Weaver, who has written a courageous young journalist here in Montreal, who has written articles and co-signed articles in the Globe and Mail about extraterritorial assassinations by the Rwandan government.
Yeah.
This was in the Globe and Mail. She's been threatened.
Yeah.
And David Himbara, who was a former advisor to Kagame and had to flee Rwanda, then had to flee South Africa and came back to Canada, where he grew up here in Canada and did his PhD here, and he has been under extreme threats. So he's So anyway, it's that was what we're doing.
It's very, very important work. And again, by the way, Teogen Rudasingha is in your book. And so that's it's a very great credit to your publishing. I think we have to go, but I want to thank you very much for being with us. Robin Philpott, publisher, Baraka Books. You're listening to CIUT 89.5 FM. Thank you very much, Robin.
Thanks for calling. Okay. Bye.
Yep. Bye-bye. Call us up at 416-946-7800. We're joined by somebody who looks familiar to me, Ken Stauer. I bet he's going to say something.
I sure am. And I just want to thank everyone that's made a kind donation during your program this evening. Just to show you how well Phil Taylor connects with people. This program, in the course of a little better than an hour, has brought in $3,000 alone, which is just phenomenal. Congratulations. Wow. I mean, that's wonderful.
That's me applauding.
Yes. And so I want to thank every single person who has made the time to donate and show their support for the Taylor Report and this radio station, CIUT 89.5 FM, the new sound of your city, membership drive campaign, 416-946-7800. And as well, Phil has kindly agreed to extend the show today. And for those of you tuning in to hear Being There with Jesse Mendez, Jesse is on hiatus for a couple of months. She will return sometime in late June.
But we'll continue to take support for Jesse and the program and for CIUT. And thank you very, very much. By the way, that is wonderful news about the – I hadn't heard the – I love numbers like that.